Well, this is the podcast for our class on Wednesday, September 29, and it's class number 10. And we discussed in this class liability of property possessors, and that's owners and occupiers, and the special duty rules that had developed at common law, and then how this has been changing over the past 30 years in many jurisdictions. The framework for any duty discussion for property occupiers, that is possessors, owners, occupier, is just that you have to question what's their duty to property, to individuals who come on property, and what's their duty to individuals that go buy their property. There's special duty rules for people going by the property. It's reasonable care and being injured by anything that falls from your property. Certainly reasonable care applies. But for people coming on the property, the duty traditionally at common law was different depending on the different status of the individuals that come on the property. So we talked about the different status rules. Trespasser, very no affirmative duties, just refrain from willful and wanton behavior. Licensees, which are social guests, and all the tradition was to warn of dangers which you have are aware of. And there's been some question about, well, does that mean you don't have to warn of obvious, open and obvious, or just hidden dangers? And jurisdictions treat that differently, but basically it's treat social guests like your family. And then there's the business invitee status. So that for those people, you have the highest standard of care, which is inspect and make safe. Protection of individuals who come on your property is primary, you know. So these status rules, as I said, came from common law and really developed in as kind of a in competition to your rights as property owners. Remember, we give, you know, very great deference to the right property ownership and very great deference to those rights that are inherent in property ownership. You can do whatever you want with your property, but remember, you can't act in a way that injures somebody. And now when we talk about liability for conditions on your property, it at common law was still very much dependent upon the status of people. To social guests, have expectation of protection. Why should you give any more protection to a social guest than you would to your own family? That's the basic thought behind that. The rules for the licensee, and then the invitee, again, expectation of protection. You're getting a benefit, a monetary benefit, so you should have some responsibilities. So then when we talked about the Carter v. Kinney case, kind of illustrated how difficult it is to really assign a status classification to individuals. It's, you know, there's always another exception that comes along. There's always a what if. Well, suppose the fact changed a little bit. So there's difficulty, lots of gray areas. Easy if you're talking about your home, somebody coming to a party and somebody going to Macy's, but as this case illustrates, gray areas, you know, and this case got all the way to the top court in Missouri, so it wasn't exactly what could be considered an open and shut case, whether our Bible study group member was an invitee or a licensee, that is a business guest or a social guest. So the court said, although our injured party wanted to be called a business guest because there was going to be a higher duty of care, our court said no. There was no monetary benefit. His presence did not monetarily benefit the defendant in any measurable way. So he couldn't be called a business guest. He couldn't be called the status of an invitee. The court here had the opportunity to change all of these status classification rules, and they didn't do it. They maintained the old common law classifications. They could have done it here. They didn't do it. Then we talked about the very next year, along comes the Hines case, and in Nebraska they did change these status classifications, eliminated the classifications to then say one duty of care to all entrance upon property, that of reasonable care. But since our standard is reasonable care under the circumstances, the classifications have relevance because the circumstances of their being there has a very frequently can have a bearing on what on whether your conduct towards them was reasonable. Now, think of, and in Nebraska, as in many of the jurisdictions that have considered this and made the change, they did still keep the classification of trespasser and no affirmative duties to trespasser. So what does that mean when you eliminate the classifications? Well, it means that the cases go to the jury, not dismissed by in a summary judgment, as was the case in our Carter v. Kinney. Cases now go to the jury for a reasonable care analysis. So, you know, we talked a little bit about why they would make the change. It's easier, it's more predictable, as opposed to keeping the classifications. Still, I think there's just a bit a great unwillingness to impose duties at all on property owners. So, you know, again, there's always this tension between tort and property, compensation and respect of the rights of property owners. So, again, if for these things, you have to be aware of what the rules of your own jurisdiction are. New York followed California, just as Nebraska did here. New York and Bossa v. Miller eliminated all of the classifications in 82, even that for trespasser, and just has a reasonable care analysis for everything. Then we moved on to a really huge area of this property owner liability, much more so than injuries on the property, I think, is responsibility of property owners for criminal activity on their property. And this, we see many, many cases, mostly in security cases. But again, what's the duty of a property owner to prevent, what's the duty of a property owner to third parties who come on the property and who are injured by criminal activity? So it's, again, it's liability for third parties, criminal activity. And we talked about where we've seen this before. Certainly, Vince V. Wilson, criminal activity by a third party. Tarasoff, Randy V. Murak. I mean, we've had plenty of these kind of cases. And here, of course, the courts look to what we've seen before, knowledge and control, foreseeability. Here the court looks to foreseeability. Is has there been, is it foreseeable that there will be criminal activity on your property? If so, you have a duty of care. It's, you know, again, it's reasonable care. Take minimal precautions. It's not huge precautions, but your duty here, they've based it again on foreseeability. And it's foreseeability and the ability to control. So our landlord cases, who has the ability to control access, lighting, cameras? Well, it's the landlord. And if it's foreseeable that criminal activity will take place in on your property, then you have the ability to behave reasonably to protect those entrants on the property. So we talked about Posakai, and Posakai was a good case to give a summary of the various ways that courts have used to evaluate foreseeability of the harm, foreseeability of a risk. You know, specific harm has this kind of accident. This certain accident happened before. Has this type of accident happened before? Have accidents happened in the area? Look at the whole area. That's a totality of circumstances. It's been the broadest sort of way to evaluate foreseeability. And then finally, the rules of the court court adopted this balancing test. Look at the all of the predictability of criminal activity versus the burden of eliminating the activity. And that's certainly much more narrow test than the totality of circumstances test. Court decided that to adopt this predictability test, and that it wasn't predictable. There had been very few accidents in the past, and it would have been a great burden on the Walmart to try to eliminate these accidents. Now again, so it's not foreseeable. So they decided it wasn't foreseeable. So no duty. Now, we talked about a little bit this balancing test. I said, why are you balancing why are they using this test? This test is way too close to the hand formula, which was used to establish reasonable care. What difference does it make if it would cost a whole lot to eliminate all the risk if using the balancing test to determine foreseeability? So I think it was poorly applied here. I don't think the balancing test has anything to do with duty and foreseeability, but the court decided to go ahead with it anyway. For your purposes, just remember that their foreseeability is our key here, and there are a variety of tests to use. Courts, you know, we talked about the kinds of the cases that have, these security cases that have come up lately, hotels very much, privacy, and again, look to the foreseeability. Then we skimmed over intrafamily duties very quickly because it's not difficult at all. The question is when, you know, will a parental immunity apply, or when can you have a valid case for negligent supervision? And this is by the child to the parent, by the child suing the parent for negligent supervision. Why would they do that? Because they want to get their homeowner's policy. And there's no way to get the homeowner's policy would not apply outside of this homeowner's liability policy outside of this litigation aspect. So courts some courts retain parental immunity. New York, Holodeck and Zilley, the cases, will not allow suits for negligent supervision. when the case arises out of parental discretion, but will allow when it's a they have a duty to the world. So if it's negligent driving or negligent, walking, jaywalking while carrying your child, that's a duty to the world. So they will allow negligent supervision cases. In Broadbent, they opened the door, expanded the Goeller test. And New York basically follows Goeller. Holodeck and Zilkley followed Goeller. And they, in Arizona now, they've expanded negligent supervision cases to the reasonable parent. So question, what's a reasonable parent? Can you possibly define it? But they, the jurisdictions that have opened the door to negligent supervision say, the reasons that we had before just don't apply. So anyway, read this over. I'm going to hold you responsible for it, even though we covered it very, very briefly in class. It's not complicated material. So just by reading it, you should be able to feel comfortable. Okay, next class, we're going to start with governmental immunities. I'm asking you to read the risk case and the note cases very carefully following it, Schuster, Cerchetti, and Cuffey, and the Lauer case. I doubt whether we'll get past that to Friedman. So, but read those cases very carefully because we need to be discussing them in great amount of detail. Okay, so again, next class, we're going to start with risks and governmental immunities.